There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the bill we got? I mean, the bill we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along on this Tuesday. More live local talk. Of course, remember, you can stream this through our website and other platforms, but the brand new FM Talk 106.5 app, a great place to do it, and also to be able to leave us one of those talkback messages or text us or call the station, plus the latest traffic, the latest weather information, podcast galore, streaming the station. Tons of features on there. Check it out through Google Play or iTunes. Just search for FM TALK 1065. You'll see our logo. Download it. That is our app. I'm excited about talking to our next guest, Allison Horner, State Farm insurance agent. And of course, you hear her voice here at FM Talk 1065, but she has agreed to come in and like answer my questions, which I think will be a lot of y'all's questions when it comes to insurance and hurricane season. Thanks for being here.
I'm glad to be here.
I don't know if there's a best time to review our insurance policy, but I would imagine this is pretty good time to know what's going on with our insurance policies.
This is a great time to call your agent and ask to review your homeowner's policy. Every homeowner's policy sends out a notification once a year at the anniversary of the policy. So that's a reminder every year that you get in the mail. But if you just didn't do it that time or that wasn't a great time, now is a really good time with hurricane season upon us.
I need that motivation. I may or may not have reacted when I get that letter each year or so, but this time of year, and the little shakedown we had over the weekend, not anything major, but maybe would bring that back up in people's minds and remembering last year and all that. So first of all, just the general idea of us picking up the phone and calling you, that's a normal thing. Is that, that's not like, that's, it's okay for us to call you and say, absolutely, hey, we want to do a review.
Yes. And your agent is probably going to be very glad to receive your phone call and go over your coverages with you, because awareness is key. Everybody wants you to be aware of what you have in your policy so that there aren't disappointments and frustrations on the other end should you need to file a claim.
And that happens, right?
We've
been in the house a long time, had the policy a long time, really don't think about it.
Well,
you know,
we don't deal, the normal consumer doesn't deal with this on a daily basis. And what we don't handle on a regular basis, we lose familiarity with it. So,
preach.
this is the same would apply for me to something that I don't deal with on a regular basis.
Right.
So my encouragement would be to get familiar with your policy and find out particularly what your deductibles are so that you know, you know what your regular deductible is. You know what your hurricane deductible is, and if there are differences there, and what does that coverage look like? What does that deductible look like?
Yeah, and that's like, I'm just thinking about mine specifically. They are different.
Yes.
And so can people go through, and okay, so we've got a regular deductible there for everything. Would it be for everything other than hurricane? Or
usually.
Okay.
Usually there are some companies that will have a wind deductible, and that will cover all wind event 365 days of the year. So any wind, whether it's in January or August. And then other companies will have a specific hurricane deductible. So wind in January would be your regular deductible, but wind in a hurricane event would be specifically your hurricane deductible.
Okay. That brings me to this question that, or not even a question, it's something that those of us who are not professionals in this throw around all the time. Tell you what, storm gets in the Gulf, you're not going to be able to get insurance. So, Allison, like, kind of walk us through the basics. I know there's specifics to this, but What's is that true?
There is a cutoff period, and each company will have their own parameters where that cutoff time frame is. But it's usually when it's a named hurricane in the Gulf and passing certain parallels. Each company will shut down their ability to be able to write new business or make changes on any existing business. If you're curious about that, then the best plan of action is to call the agent and say, hey, are you able to do anything? Are you able to write? Are you able to make changes to my policy?
Now, let me just ask you, real world, in your life, when there's one of those big storms come across the Atlantic, and it's out still east of Florida, hadn't gotten in the Gulf yet. Are your phones ringing at the office?
They do start to ring, yes. People have questions, and that's great. We want to be able to answer those questions. Again, awareness is key. Knowledge is great. Then you're aware of what your policy is, what your coverages are, and that avoids a lot of unhappiness.
Yeah, and because I hear these stories, people go, well, I didn't know I didn't have this, or I didn't know the deductible was that. So this is the time of year to get those
Absolutely.
Questions answered.
Now is the time.
What about trees? You know, trees were, I mean, Sally, God bless. Well, Zeta, too, with the trees down. Like, my coverage of a tree breaks through my roof, right? That's right. Covered. What if my neighbor's tree breaks through my roof?
Well, that's still going to be considered a loss if the damage occurred to your house, even if it's your neighbor's tree.
So it's not their policy, it's my policy.
It's the damage to your house.
Okay,
even
true.
If it was caused by their tree.
Okay. What leads after a storm around here? Is it water issues? Is it tree issues? I mean, even though I know, I guess the tree comes through the roof and the water gets in the house, but do you deal with more of like trees down through things or storm surge? Or what do you see mostly? Or flooding?
We don't deal with a lot of storm surge, more trees, more wind issues. That is something to note, though, that people also want to check on is flood coverage, because that is a separate policy from your homeowner's policy.
And so that's an additional...
Right. That's rising waters.
Okay.
Anything that would be covered by your homeowner's policy is typically from an internal source in the house. Say, a dishwasher, that kind of thing. But flood policies will cover external sources of water.
There's a lot of questions, and I will get some of y'all's questions at 343-0106. Our guest, Allison Horner, she wants us to give her a call. She wants you to call your agent and find out before we get any further. You talked about the deductible amounts. Can those be adjusted on the, you know, let's say it's one that's specific to hurricanes.
Mm-hmm.
Can we adjust that deductible? You know, is it as locked in, like with the other deductible, you can raise that and lower monthly rates.
Right.
Is hurricane the same way with those coverages? Can you?
With most companies, it is adjustable. They might have a minimum amount of deductible by percent.
Okay.
Percentage
of the insured structure.
Percentage of the insured amount of the structure. Yes, that is correct. Or they may have what's referred to as a flat deductible, a flat amount of money. That's getting a little bit more rare in our area because of the hurricane activity.
Right.
Usually it's a percentage, and that the lower the percentage, the higher your costs. So there's balance there.
Sure.
You want to determine where you want to shift that risk, and that's what insurance is all about, is where do you want to place that risk? Do you want to take that risk on yourself? Or are you willing to pay a little bit more in premium and have somebody else take that financial risk off of you?
Tell you what, if something bad happens and we got to make a claim, I won't have the language right, but I know you will. People say you got to check if you've got replacement value on it, or what
or
is the other?
Actual cash value.
Cash value. Okay, so educate me here. What are those two? What does that mean?
Actual cash value, you'll hear that referred to as ACV coverage quite a bit, and that's versus replacement coverage. Replacement coverage is going to give you today's value on the item.
Okay.
Whatever that item is in question. Whereas actual cash value, or ACV, is going to be today's value less the depreciation of, so say something is 10 years old.
Okay.
It's going to be today's cost less whatever the 10-year aging of that is.
Would that end up be for specific items, but what for like the house. Let's say we had the tree came through, and okay, it's going to cost us $28,000 to repair this or whatever. Then kind of walk me through what replacement versus ACV would be there.
The same principle applies. If in most houses, I will say, are replacement cost value. But that is a good and valid question to ask as far as your coverage is concerned. But most people will assume they have replacement cost value. That's an awesome question to ask because you want to know for sure. And but the same principle applies. If it's replacement cost value, then it's going to be today's price that you're going to get considered for your claim.
And Lord knows we've talked enough about the cost of lumber lately. So I got a questions coming in. Allison, Keith and Sim says, does a policy change on its own?
Well, it can change in a lot of different ways. One thing that we see our policies do is increase in the coverage amount from year to year. And we do that so that we remain current with prices. And you mentioned lumber.
Right.
That is a big impact on what it would cost to rebuild even a portion of a home right now. So, for instance, let's take an extreme. You wrote your coverage in 1980. Well, 40 years later, you don't want the insured amount that you wrote in 1980. You want that policy to have increased a little along the way.
As that home's appreciated.
Exactly. And it's not what the house can sell for. It's not market value. It's what it would cost to replace the home.
Now, this goes into, we're starting a series of questions on this lumber thing. So Jason said, should I increase my coverage based on the cost of building materials right now? That's kind of what you're talking about.
Well, that's a very valid thing to discuss with your agent, and they can go through the process of helping you evaluate your home. There are a lot of things to consider: age of home, square footage. We take into account the type of roof, age of roof, flooring, everything about the home, all of the details, and help create an estimated replacement cost value. That will take into account the rise in lumber costs lately.
So like Jason, who is worried about that, let's see if I get this right, Villard, he'd be interested in the replacement value versus ACV.
Yes.
If you're trying to insure and hedge against the fact that...
that's a great example of that.
See, that's something that I'm glad you're here talking about this, because I wouldn't have thought about it to call and check that. So you can just, if I want to be pretty cool when I call my agent to call you, I can say, hey, do I have replacement cost or ACV?
Yes.
It can make me sound like I know what I'm talking about.
You would sound very knowledgeable.
So that question right now, this is the time. It's not the time when we're with the storm in the Gulf. It's not a time afterwards to be surprised by something. There is, and at the beginning of the conversation, you said it is a normal thing to call your agent. It's
Absolutely.
Not a, like a, they're not going, oh my gosh, Sullivan's on the phone asking me, you know, that's like a normal deal.
No, absolutely, it's normal. We want the phone call. We want the opportunity to review this with you and make sure that your coverage is as accurate as possible and fits the need that you have. This goes back to the balance that I was talking about a minute ago, the risk transference. Where does that go? You've got a balance between what is affordable on a regular basis to pay for that policy, what do you have set aside to cover a deductible, all of these things we want to review with you, make sure that you're taken care of. That's the business that we're in.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I heard so many stories, too, that like for Baldwin County after Sally, people were working with FEMA and other groups, but you had to meet your deductible, you know, to get that. So that's something people need to consider, too, even if they just say, oh, I'm going to depend on FEMA or something for that. Yeah, no, you got to get to that point.
Exactly. And again, awareness is key. Having a knowledge, just a basic knowledge of your homeowner's policy, it's advisable to look at it. I mean, everybody gets that notification in the mail, whether or not you read it and sometimes even understand what it says. Okay, that goes on the desk and gets overlooked for a little while.
Are you watching me at my house? Because that's
everybody does.
It's okay.
My encouragement is at least once every year or two, pick up the phone, call your agent, be familiar again with your policy. What we all hope and pray for is that there is no damage.
Right. Of course.
But that's a little, you know, rainbows and unicorn attitude.
Right.
It's not going to happen to everybody all the time. And the better prepared we are with knowledge, the easier everything is.
I'm looking at the text line here. This replacement cost versus ACV. I mean, there are people saying, absolutely, I've done this. This is so I guess people are getting their eyes open to this. And so that's
a great thing.
So you just gotta, you would steer somebody through the conversation, ask them certain questions, which is better for them.
Yes.
This is great. Now talk about this as we move through this year. People looking at their policies, they go hurricane season and they get through hurricane season. That's not the time to adjust. It's the time to adjust it now, right? Don't come into it. It's not a benefit or a discount for me to roll through this hurricane season and wait till December to talk to you about my next policy.
Well, some companies will have limitations on when you can change your deductibles. For instance, you might have a time period around your renewal that you're able to make changes to your hurricane deductible. And that is in an effort to prevent the gaming of, you know, I'm going to change it for hurricane season, then I'm going to change it back. You really need to have a thoughtful discussion and decide for the year. This is what I'm going to have, and know I'm paying this premium for this.
Right.
Make those decisions once a year.
Well, this is something that opened a lot of eyes out here, especially mine. Tell folks how to get in touch with you if they want to walk through their policy or get a policy with you.
You can reach us at our office at area code 251-666-1616. Or if you want to look us up at allisonhorner.com.
Thank you. Thanks for coming in.
Yes,
thanks for the education.
Absolutely. Happy to share that information.
And now I'm going to ride herd around going, well, I'll tell you what, it's replacement cost versus ACV. I'll be showing off with that. Alice, I appreciate you. Thanks.
Absolutely.
Coming right back. More Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Appreciate the text. Like y'all, good education for me. Talking to Allison Horner. Whoever your agent is, it's cool. It's cool to call them and say, hey, what's the story here? It's hurricane season. What's the story? What do I have? Too many calls from folks after Sally and to some degree Zeta. They're like, man, I thought I had this and I didn't have that. And so might as well get an update on that. We got a second. I want to mention this story because this goes into conversations we've had on this show several times. And a couple times we've had those conversations with Representative Chris Pringle, who's in charge of redistricting here in the state of Alabama. And even though we kept seven congressional seats, the new census data comes out, and you've got to reapportion. You've got to have the exact same number of people in all seven congressional districts. It's hard, right? Populations move. You have increases or just shuffling of populations. You got to redraw those lines. Same thing for, I think there's a 5% or less margin of error for state districts, for House and Senate and a whole bunch of other things. So to do this, they have to get these census information and the census blocks in to make these decisions. And I think you've heard the lament that we didn't get them back in the first stuff back in January and February, and now we're looking at maybe August, September for the detail, and that's what they have to even start the process of redrawing the districts, which has to be done by this coming spring of 2022, actually before that, a good time before that. So the story here from our buddy Jeff Poore over at yellowhammernews.com says, on Tuesday, 15 Republican governors issued a joint letter urging Secretary of Commerce Gina Raimondo to release the 2020 census redistricting data as soon as possible. Included among those was Governor Kay Ivey. Letter warns that the nearly six-month delay releasing the data has made state legislatures unable to redraw district lines prior to the 2022 election cycle. You have, in addition to Alabama, you have Arkansas, Arizona, Florida, Georgia, Iowa, Missouri, Montana, Nebraska, North Dakota, Ohio, South Carolina, Tennessee, Texas, and Wyoming. Governors all asking for this to be expedited. I don't know why it is taking so long, but it could be a story we're talking about in 2022 that we have to have some kind of delay on election cycle or something like that because people won't be in their new districts by that point. Hey, speaking of districts, Mobile City Council, District 7, Councilwoman and candidate for re-election, Gina Gregory, joins me next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back to FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile. Glad to have y'all along. And, you know, sometimes I'll call these segments Get to Know the Candidate, but how about to reacquaint yourself? Okay, just talk to the candidate. Mobile City Council, District 7, Councilwoman Gina Gregory in studio. A lot to talk about. Glad to have you in here. Good
Thanks,
to see you.
Sean. Yes, good to be here. And you still have my voicer at the top of your show.
Here we go. Yes. And I pay you royalties every year for that, right?
I haven't seen the check. That's one of those things.
I gave it to Todd.
It.
He's got the check. I gave it to him directly. Yeah. One of the voices you hear as we open the show, mm-hmm. it is your voice at a Mobile City Council meeting. So do you think that from then to now, how people act in the council meeting, market improvement, or what are you thinking?
It depends on the day and the issue.
Yes.
Because you just never know. Sometimes I say it's like there's a full moon. We can have an agenda that is, people will look at it and say, oh, there's nothing really going on today. Should be no big deal. Everything looks fine. And somebody will come to speak or somebody will bring up an issue. And then an hour or hour and a half or so later, we haven't even started on the agenda. You know? So things change. Things happen.
And y'all have y'all have the pre-meeting.
We do.
Before you even have the meeting. So you've already, by the time we're watching, if we're watching the live stream or whatever, the council meeting, y'all have already been talking about it beforehand.
Well, sometimes yes. But when speakers come to what we call our regular meeting at 10:30, we have not heard from them yet.
Right.
If they sign up ahead of time for what we call a non-agenda item, then we have at least a subject matter.
Mm-hmm.
But if they sign up to speak to something on the agenda, we don't know until they come in and sign in. And sometimes they ask a lot of questions. Sometimes they have problems with them. Sometimes someone who signs up ahead of time to speak to a non-agenda item that we think may not be controversial, we may be able to handle pretty quickly, turns into 30 minutes, an hour-long discussion because, you know, everybody wants to say something about it and we try to help resolve, you know, the issues if possible. So you just never know.
How often?
Like today, I had to scurry out a little early able to make this.
Yes, and sorry about that, but I want to talk about, for today's meeting. So I have not watched today's meeting yet. So the discussion about the 58 million, close to the number, coming
to
the city. A lot of the discussion we had last week was the discussion of bonuses for city employees, for full-time and part-time city employees. Kind of, did anything new happen on that today?
No, nothing new has happened on that. We do have a committee meeting coming up soon to discuss it further because anyone who had any suggestions or proposed changes needed to get those into the administration because there is a deadline to send to the state to let them know how we intend to spend the money. I think most everybody is on board with how the administration has set it out. There are a couple of questions and suggestions from a couple of my colleagues, but I think for the most part, we're all on board and certainly want to see the bonuses go to employees.
Right.
I know some people have questioned it, why are you giving bonuses to employees? But, our employees were all working through the pandemic.
Right.
They never were able to take time off. They kept doing the work. So we wanted a way to be able to provide them this money. And as the mayor has explained as well, this is actually how the money is intended to be used for employees like these. So that's one of the areas: $5,000 for full time, and then $2,500 for part time.
Well, when the state the state gives you, because I remember in the CARES Act, that was very specifically for COVID relief. Now we could kind of get gray on some of that, but it was for COVID relief. Yeah. This is Recovery Act. So is the state telling you or the feds telling you how this can be allocated?
These are the feds. They're telling us what the money can be used for. And one of the categories we don't qualify for because the city you know, very fortunately, did not lose revenue during the pandemic. We are one of the few cities that actually didn't have to lay anybody off. We didn't lose any revenues. We actually are above where we had projected we would be. So we don't qualify for that one bucket of money.
So, but we do qualify for...
For everything else.
Now, with that money, and I saw the breakdown for all these different projects. And Mayor Stimson was in talking about things that were... Maybe sea change gets thrown around too much, but opportunities to do things that always wanted to, but there wasn't the Gafers building or something like that.
The Gafers building, yeah. That's a good example of years and years worth of trying to be able to renovate the building and use it for affordable housing on top and then, of course, retail on the bottom. But they have just not been able to do it. So they looked at it as an opportunity to renovate the Gafers building. And, of course, that rehabs that whole corner downtown. So that's just one area. Of course, affordable housing, rental assistance, those kinds of things are also in it, as is broadband to bring broadband to areas where we don't have it. And I have an area in my district out at Municipal Baseball Football that actually needs broadband service. So there you go.
So that's, you know, and I wonder, because you talk about that allocation from the state, but we can also petition the state, right? The city can petition the state for additional...
Yeah, the
additional...
state is different. What we were talking about was federal dollars.
Right.
The state has an
Even though those were federal dollars that went to the state.
Yeah.
Right?
Well,
okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Semantics. The state has another bucket of money, $2.1 billion, I believe, is what it is. And we have to go back and apply for that. And it won't be available until sometime next year. So, and that will mostly be for stormwater infrastructure types of projects.
Right.
So we have time to go back and look at what we want to use that for. And I'm sure all six of my colleagues and I will have plenty of input on that one.
Well, I mean, okay, so you mentioned something that obviously I have a broken record on this, on the stormwater issue here and the challenges, but the challenges that maybe I thought in the BP aftermath, and I know some money was spent, but is this a chance to address things with stormwater that maybe the regular funding mechanisms wouldn't have been there for?
It certainly can be, yes. And, we haven't seen what anybody wants to do yet, because you've got people who want to close ditches.
Yes.
Along with people like me who would like to see Langan Park, money for Langan Park and what we're doing out there with Restore Act funds, stabilizing the bank, dredging, that kind of thing. And then, of course, we have some more overriding issues citywide for all of the stormwater and all the concerns, all the litter, you know, moving downstream. So,
right.
Plenty of opportunities for this money.
I'm a big Langan Park fan. And let's talk about that specifically for a second. That's, you know, do my walks and all that stuff and enjoy it out there. You're talking about the dredging. Are we dredging the lake?
Not yet.
Okay, but is that part of the...
That's part of the Restore Act.
Okay.
So that is actually
on... So that's
on
BP money.
Yes, that's all generated back to BP. We actually have people now who were doing what is called bathymetric surveys.
Okay.
Which I had no clue what that was, but... Sean, you'll know what this is. It's because when you're out fishing and you've got your fish finder and it shows all the levels of what's underneath.
Right.
Basically what this is, they do surveys to see what's under the water, the layers of the matter, the organic materials, what it is, how deep it goes, that kind of thing, to help better understand how to dredge it, where to put it, you know, what's in there, all those kinds of questions that we have to answer before we can actually do the dredging itself. But it's a step in the right direction.
And it's a way, I mean, you could talk about it for quality of the lake for fishing and all that kind of stuff. But also, if you're looking at, here comes from up the hill, here comes rain coming down to Langan Park, more retention.
More stuff, more sediment, more whatever you're putting in your yard, it all just comes down. And that's really what Langan Lake has become, is it's more of a detention pond than it is a true lake. But once we dredge it, we'll have to continue dredging over the years in order to make sure that we have enough depth to put a boat on it, like a canoe or a kayak, to keep the sediment from filling up. Because you know what happens. The sediment comes down. We don't have any rain. It gets really hot and algae and things form. And it's just not a good situation. But the dredging is the most important part right now to get that done so that we can get people back out on the water. That's one of the things that I intend to do if I'm reelected. I will continue working on this to make sure that we get that lake dredged and we get canoes and kayaks back out on Langan Lake, because that's the way people used to be able to do it way back in the 60s and early 70s. I have pictures. I even have a somebody sent me a Super 8 film that they were able to digitize and sent it to me of Langan Park. And it's just amazing to see what it used to look like. And we're not going to be able to make it exactly like it was, but right. we are certainly going to try to get as close as possible.
Well, it's good. I mean, good the lake portion of it, because I tell you what, the on land is well used. I mean, I'm out there. I mean, there's lots of folks out there.
Very well used, from disc golfers to just people who are out walking. They've got their dogs. They're enjoying just being out, you know, getting some sun. Of course, people still feed the ducks and that kind of thing. And we've got a playground over there. So picnics. Today, we were going through the different requests for noise waivers at Langan Park for okay. family reunions, for praise concerts. It's packed all the time.
It's a great testament to that and why it's worth investing in and keeping it.
We're investing millions of dollars. If you look at what we're getting from Restore and then what the city is putting in, we're just now finishing up $1 million worth, a $500,000 worth of pavilion renovations out there. We've got another $1 million on tap to renovate what's considered the old band shell mm-hmm. that is sort of an amphitheater.
Yeah.
So we've got another $1 million to start working on that. So we're investing the money. We are transforming Langan Park.
Wow, that's...
I know. It's exciting. It's about time. It's just, mm-hmm. you know, it just takes so much money, but finally we're able to do it.
So as you know, and I see this with the mailer that you send out for, you know, what we're working on and what you want to, you know, hearing from people on, as you look at that. So Langan Park's an issue. What other issues inside 7 do you think are the top priorities?
Well, what I'm looking at now is we have so much going on. They have been priorities to do for so long, and now we're able to do them. Ziegler, the widening of Ziegler is another one that has probably been on the books for 20 years. We are finally able to get it done, and that's a combination from the federal government, the state, the county, and of course the city, all combining funding for this. It's a massive project. It has two phases. From Schillinger all the way up to Cody, and then from Cody down to Forest Hill. There's a little piece in between that is not really covered in that the city will come back and four-lane it and put in the sidewalks and the
bike. Good, so we're not going to go four-lane, two-lane, four-lane.
We may for a little while, but once it's all done, I was talking to the engineers today about how we're going to make all that work. So, but once it's done, we'll do it all at the same time. When we start getting close to finishing up probably the second phase, we'll be able to come in and get the lanes where they need to be in order to put the sidewalks and bike lanes in, so that you don't really have any in-between drop-offs or anything like that. It's just, it takes a very long time to get this done right, and they had to go back and redraw the design over time because at first it didn't include the bike lanes, so
right.
the state said go back, put in bike lanes, so we've done all of that. It took about 2 years to negotiate with the railroad because that north side over there gets so close to the railroad track. So we finally finished that and got going. The first segment from Schillinger East started months, probably 6 months.
I drove it last night, yeah.
Yeah, 6 months or so, maybe closer to a year before that second phase started. The second phase is more difficult because you've got the park there, a lot of utilities, service roads right there, so a lot more work had to go into and has to go into that that second phase.
All right, coming right back, Mobile City Councilwoman Jeannie Gregory, District 7. We're going to talk about some citywide issues, even though the Northwest Territories of District 7 are
where we are.
The Northwest Territory, right? That's how I've always called it. Come back for more of that discussion. Your questions next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 Midday Mobile on this Tuesday. Reminder too, FM Talk 106.5 app waiting for you. Google Play, iTunes Store. You get the ability not only to call and text and get latest weather and traffic information, podcasts, stream the station. Also that talkback feature where you can press the microphone icon down there, leave us a voice message, and drop it right here at the station. Maybe we'll play it back on the air. So check it out, the new FM Talk 106.5 app at Google Play or iTunes. Continue our conversation with District 7 Mobile City Councilwoman Jeannie Gregory. And I got to kind of break out of 7 for a second, although, you know, I've one of your constituents for a long time, so mm-hmm. I have 7 things were of interest in the Northwest Territories. But this is actually part of the, I know, I call it the Northwest Territories.
Well, we are as far north and west as you can get and still be in the city. So, yes, Northwest Territories, I think, is a good way to describe it.
So what happens if that changes? And that is the question of annexation.
Well, I would still be,
the Northwest Territories.
I would still be the Northwest Territories, but if you're talking about the
the areas that have reached out to the city.
Right, and so everybody, even though we've said this a million times and it seems remedial here, once again, what's that question is giving the right of referendum to those people. It's not, y'all are not voting to annex them in. You're
correct.
Would vote to allow them to vote.
To vote, which we have done at least twice that I can recall since I've been on the council. And we've been successful in a couple of them. One, we were not successful, as I recall. So, yes, it would only be
They could say no.
They can say no. So it would only be giving the people who have actually reached out to the city and told us they would like to be part of the city, giving them the opportunity to vote to come into the city. The council only is agreeing to allow a referendum, yes.
And but that didn't pass.
No, it didn't. No, it didn't. And it still sparks a lot of conversation, and it will be a big topic during this election season.
Is it a, from your perspective, let's say the vote came up and the people voted to come in. People call with a lot of different issues here. Is it a net gain or a net loss for the city?
Revenue-wise?
Yeah.
Revenue-wise, yes, it is a net gain.
Okay.
It's also obviously a net gain for population. But when you look at the areas that had requested to be allowed to vote. You look at those neighborhoods. Those are newer neighborhoods that have been in the county right next door to the city. They don't require us to pass a bond issue to resurface their streets, do drainage work, put in lights, kinds of things. Everything is new and in good working order. All we would have to do is provide garbage and trash. They're already getting police and fire. So garbage and trash, the only service that we would have to provide. The net gain that we get would be more than what we would have to pay out for garbage and trash. And I think that was the message that the mayor and his folks were trying to get across to people, because the net gains would be spread across the city, obviously, so that everybody would get a benefit from that. You know, the all boats lift, you know, the rising tide sort of a thing. But I just don't know that that message resonated, you know, with a lot of people.
Now, and one of the questions is that maybe there's not an answer to it, but let's say that they voted to come in and those areas are within the PJ, and then that becomes the city limits, right, in those areas, if they voted themselves to come in.
If they voted themselves in. And again, they were drawn in separate, you know, groups.
Sure.
So one might come in, two others might not, and, you know, vice versa. And,
it may look like Legos on the outside.
Right, what happened just in my district, when Mobile Terrace came into the city, we had, I think it was three different areas. Mobile Terrace voted to come in, and the administration at that time knew pretty well that Mobile Terrace was the one that was most likely to approve it. So they drew the retail corridor connecting it to Mobile Terrace.
Right.
So that's why we have that retail corridor within the city, and Mobile Terrace is now in my district, and I represent them.
So question here, if the new limit, city limits defined, would we project a PJ beyond that?
You know, there are so many questions about the PJ and what we do and not do. I don't know I don't know.
Okay.
It would have to be, I'm sure, something that would be discussed and decided, but, you know, let's find out for sure if there's going to be a vote or not, one way or the other, before the election, after the election. I think that's something that has been discussed. I know a lot of people are very interested on when we might talk about that again.
And I just have about a minute and a half left here, but I got to ask you here, where do you stand on this Amtrak thing? Because I'm befuddled. I don't understand it.
Join the club.
Okay.
You know, the last time that we had much of a discussion at the council level about this was to say, fine, we will we'll put up $3 million, but, you know, we have to have the study. We have to know what's happening. We have to make sure the port's taken care of. What happens to freight? You know, what is, and of course, what is the federal government doing? You know,
they didn't do the study.
Well, they didn't the study. They're not, apparently not going to do the study. But I think we also have to look at what is the federal government or the transportation department going to do, because what they decide to do may override all of our decisions. And we just haven't heard anything one way or the other.
I mean, yeah, I've said this before. If they want to come in and pay, pun intended, full freight here and put the thing in and not no charge to the city, then I'm for, But what about a train station?
The train station, is it going to be downtown? Is it going to be at Brooklyn? You know, the city just really doesn't have a plan in place yet, because still that study hasn't been done, and I know the mayor hasn't wanted to move forward. So right now I think we're just kind of on hold.
All right. We'll be watching that story. Remind folks, more information about your campaign. Where do they go?
Oh, do I get to tell people where to go?
Yes,
yeah. Oh, cool. I have a Facebook page. It's Gina Gregory for Mobile City Council, District 7. That's hard to remember, I'm sure. But and the other one is just Gina for F-O-R 7, the numeral 7, Gina47.com. So you can look at my website.
Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, get you back soon. Mobile City Councilwoman Gina Gregory, District 7. And we are coming right back tomorrow right here at FM Talk 106.5. Paul Feinbaum Show straight ahead. Remember, check us out online and through the new FM Talk 106.5 app.